All right, welcome back to another episode of Justify Your Existence. I'm your host, Brendan Farrell, and I am joined again by our very own James Murphy. James, how are you?
Pretty good, man. It's crunch time, and we got two programs in the state that are headed in, I don't want to say opposite directions, but two very different paths. I think that's a better way to put it, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, that sounds like they have two different trajectories. Two, like, opposite trajectories.
Right.
I don't think that's quite the case.
It's not. Yeah, it's more nuanced than that.
I don't know if you could actually put a direction on Mississippi State right now.
It's kind of one of those subplot memes. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. But, yeah, so we'll get into it. You know, it is right around Halloween, and I don't know, I wouldn't say things are starting to get spooky in the SEC or anything, but it is starting to get to be that really important time of the year where you can also look at it and be like, hey, are you going to make the playoffs? Is that a thing? Here's what you have to do. Like, the sort of paths are set to that, but anyway, we'll get to all that. But first, Vanelli's Bistro is turning 50 and would like to thank the people of Tupelo for your support all these years. We look forward to the next 50 years. Vanelli's Bistro is located at 206 West Main Street. If you want to call in your order for pickup, the number is 844-4410. James, last weekend was just a real interesting weekend in the state, wasn't it?
I'd say from the hours of 11 a.m. to, I want to say, what was it? When did the state game end? Around 6 or 7?
Too late.
Right. Okay, so from 11 a.m. to a time that shall not be named, because we don't know what it is, it was most people in Mississippi were probably on their couch watching two very, very interesting games that said a lot about each team in the state.
Yeah, we'll start with state, because I was there for the Texas game, and then you were there for, you know, media availability on Monday. I just have written down, here we go again.
That's a pretty good way to put it. And it's here we go again in a way we haven't seen before. You know, one of the phrases that kind of came up during baseball season when, and it's not really, not like college baseball season, but like the pro baseball season, the one that goes into July, August, and is still going on. But point being, the phrase, good teams find a way to win, bad teams find a way to lose. And I gotta tell you, State has been doing a lot more of the latter. Losing in overtime at home is one thing. In a close game that was fairly back and forth, I think we could say that about the Tennessee game.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion.
Yeah, but, I mean, that game was never more than a one-possession game.
Right. So. Texas A&M was the better team start to finish. They just didn't really pull away until late. And they're still really good, by the way. And then you had Florida, which states, you could say, just kind of served them on a silver platter and just say, here you go. No, we mean it. Here you go. And the last one being,
it's the SpongeBob clip of Plankton being like, now let him have it. And SpongeBob just goes, here, you can have it.
Right. And the last one being probably the biggest one of all, blowing a 17-point lead with, what, 10, 8 minutes to go in the game, and then losing it overtime.
I think technically it was 12 minutes, but I mean, it was still, like, the score happened with, like, 12 minutes left or right. Whatever. But, yeah, Texas was down the field driving with 10 minutes to go and found a way to score enough to take it to overtime.
I probably mentioned this before a couple of days ago, but I really think a lot of it changed on that roughing the passer call on fourth down. If they do not commit that roughing the passer penalty, State gets the ball back with, what, 8-7 minutes left. And with great field position at the time, they could probably add points or at the very least take enough time off the clock where game's pretty much over at that point.
Granted, given that they went 3-and-out, back-to-back possessions, maybe not.
Probably not, but again, they would have had very favorable field position. So at worst, Kyle Ferry would have had to watch quite the field goal, which a lot of people have been doing these days in the pros and college.
At the very least, you'd think that maybe they just got a little more aggressive, that they're closer to the end zone. But.
And that was one of the things that Lebby kind of regretted, especially I think the specific play he referred to was when the game was tied and there were, what were there, 25, 23 seconds, third and five.
You mean when they let like 30 seconds go off the clock, or was it right after?
Yeah, at media availability, Lebby basically came out and said, hey, I should have taken a timeout there to settle my guys down. We had a great play call. It was just not executed properly because I was more focused on not letting Texas have the ball instead of trying to go either get the first down or get close enough to field goal range. I think even if they got it to fourth and two or fourth and one, then it would have been slightly within Kyle Ferry's range. The point being, he wanted to just kind of settle his guys down so that they could better execute that play instead of the ball coming loose as Blake is trying to throw the ball, and things just kind of spiraling from there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just rough game. I mean, just like any other like general sentiments from media on Monday.
Well, there's obviously a lot of frustration, and, you know, Lebby, I will say the thing that stood out to me was that he felt bad that the fans couldn't really enjoy more of the big wins. Obviously, they did against Arizona State, but it's still been over two calendar years since they've won an SEC game, and it remains the case. So, you know, people, State fans still really want that. And Lebby understands that that's something that they want and something that it's up to the team to give them. And there are still opportunities that I think are feasible, in my opinion. But, you know, there was regret there, and a lot of it is execution. A lot of it's going to be just kind of getting things done in the moment and kind of trusting in your abilities. That was a kind of a big thing from media availability, was just kind of trusting in what got you there and just kind of being able to play as loose as you did, not playing tight in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, frustration is probably like just the main emotion that everybody in Starkville is feeling right now. Because I mean, on the one hand, it's like the improvement from last year is obvious. Granted, there is nowhere to go but up from last year. But I mean, just to give you a sense of where they're at, they ended last year 88th in Bill Connolly's SP Plus rankings. This year, they are up to 38th. Granted, again, you could probably say, hey, look, Mississippi State should never be 88th in SP Plus, which totally fair. You know, at that point, you are sandwiched between Buffalo and North Texas, right? It's just not a territory that, like, many Power Four conferences or schools, like, end up in, let alone an SEC team, right? But, I mean, year over year, I mean, a 50-spot improvement, you know, like if a couple of these close games break the other way, you know, we're talking about things in a lot different manner. But you know, that's a big if, right?
It is, and at some point if needs to become reality, for lack of better words, you know, it just needs to become a result,
right? The moral victories need to actually show up on the schedule, on the standings.
Right. And again, I do think that an SEC win could still do a lot of good for the program. I got to be honest, I'm not feeling as great about their chances to make a bowl game after giving away the opportunities. I mean, if they win any of the last four games, especially the three of the four that were winnable, you State fans who are listening know which ones I'm referring to. But if they win even one of those games, I'd be supremely confident, but I think they are running out of time. They got Georgia at home. They're going to have Mizzou. I know Mizzou lost their quarterback, but they're still going to be very good. And Ole Miss seems different. We'll get more into that later. But the point being, look, I'm not nearly as bullish on them making a bowl game. But that being said, I do think that getting at least just one SEC win down the stretch could restore some optimism back in the program, because I think that's where a lot of the pessimism lies. It's like, you know, people are wondering, it's like, is this team ever going to win an SEC game again? Like, it's been 2 years. Like, where are we going with this?
Yeah, I mean, that's, that was the thing I told you before the year. I'm like, you can't no matter what, you just can't go 0-8 in conference play back-to-back years. It's just, you can't do it. You know, like, I think when I looked into it, it was like the only two teams to do that were, like, at least in recent memory, were the Chad Morris Arkansas teams and the Derek Mason and the first year of Clark Lee Vanderbilt teams. Like, that's not elite company. Anytime you get lumped in with Chad Morris and Arkansas, that's a rough spot to be in, right?
Yeah, it is. And that's where I believe, and that is where their next opportunity is going to be, you know.
Say, speaking of Arkansas.
Yep, let's head on over to Fayetteville.
I mean, that's my big thing is I'm like, well, how do you pick up the pieces again, right?
The prevailing thing about this is that I think it comes down to four words. Someone has to win. These programs are just kind of, I mean, granted, if you want to do compare and contrast, Arkansas is probably in a place that state fans look at and they're like, well, golly gee, I'm glad we're not them. But that being said, there is still plenty of talent in on Arkansas, and them being at home, I think could make this, you know, at minimum, very interesting. I wonder how anybody stops the other team, especially if Fluff Bothwell, who's probable from what I understand, is good to go on Saturday.
There is a particularly sad stretch of teams in the SP Plus rankings. Florida's 40th, Arkansas's 41, Mississippi State is 38th, and it's just like, just a few miserable teams not very far away from each other. I mean, Arkansas is one of those teams you look at the record and you're like, okay, surely this is the week, right? I think Arkansas is like one of the best bad teams I've ever seen.
Jeff Levy said it himself. This is the best 2-6 team in the country. Now, how much of that is coach speak? That's up to you, Mr. or Mrs. Listener. But there is plenty of talent. Again, there's plenty of talent. They have one of the better quarterbacks. They have a very good offense. Defensively, they have some trouble. But look, if you're going to be hanging with Arkansas, you got to be able to score. And here is where I think Jeff is going to have, Webby is going to have to put his money where his mouth is. Because he,
I was going to say, are you on a first name basis with him now?
Or? Well, I just do that with a lot of people. I've referred to Martin Scorsese as Martin. But the point being, you know, one of the other things of Jeff Lebby's press conference was how he felt like he wasn't aggressive enough because, you know, him being conservative, his words were, that's not me. Well, here's your chance to be aggressive. Because if you're not aggressive against Arkansas, you're probably not going to win.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that Arkansas is bad. They just find ways to lose games.
Again, much like Mississippi State has found different ways these last couple. Again, someone has to win.
I mean, you look at some of the games that they've lost. I mean, 41-35 to Ole Miss, 45-42 to Texas A&M. 32-31 against Memphis. You know, and then there's Notre Dame beating them 56-13. You know, the opportunities are going to be there for Mississippi State offensively. But they might need all of them because, I mean, that Arkansas offense is not to be taken lightly. Talen Green, pretty darn good dual threat quarterback, as the folks in Oxford found out earlier this year. And then, I mean, they can get things done on the ground too, and they just can't stop anybody, which is the thing.
No, they cannot. So it's up to Mississippi State's offense to get going, and that's where a lot of, I think, the pass protection is going to come in, because while Mississippi State will probably try and be more aggressive and be more of what Jeff Lebby wants to be approach-wise, Arkansas knows Mississippi State's weaknesses. They know that the pass, they're going to be dropping back to pass, and they know that the pass protection has been arguably the worst in the SEC this year. I think Blake Shapen's been sacked a conference high 22, 17, something in that ballpark. He's been sacked a lot. And Arkansas knows enough of that, and I just wonder how they're going to be able to respond. And where's that going to end? You know, I think you could speak more to it because you were at the game, but Mississippi State's pass protection started okay. It started pretty well. And then towards the end of the game, it crumbled.
Yeah, I will say, though, I felt like Mississippi State did a pretty good job of hiding their pass protection issues early on. Like, it just felt like, I felt like Chapin, like, never had, like, a straight-up normal drop back. It was all, like, play action, RPOs, like, you know, some sort of eye tomfoolery, you know, in order to hide the fact that they can't block anybody.
Something to buy him time besides the offensive line just blocking straight up.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there weren't, it just felt like there weren't that many, like, traditional dropbacks for him, which kind of tells you where things are at, right? And I guess you can only do that for so long against Texas. And I mean, that was one of the things that got them in trouble in the second half was they just couldn't protect Chapin at all.
Even though they continued to do a lot of that, those like RPOs and play actions.
Well, I mean, it's like I said, you can only do that for so long. You have to be able to drop straight back and throw the ball at a certain point. But yeah, I mean that's always the big thing for State is can they keep Chapin upright? Because again, they can't really pass block, and Chapin is horrible. I think one of the worst power four quarterbacks in terms of avoiding sacks. Like when there's pressure in his face, like it's kind of over.
It does not help that Albert Reese is questionable.
Yeah, that's certainly not going to help either. But yeah, I don't know. It was just anything else that you wanted to mention?
Feels like it's now or never, given what's coming up next. And look, I think you just need a win to reinstill belief. Belief in Jeff Lebby, belief in the team, belief in the program. I do feel like it's kind of like the meme of, you know, the light side and the dark side. And in this case, a win takes you to and a loss take you to drastically different places in terms of where your mindset is. Like, it feels like whatever Mississippi State has, they need to let it fly on Saturday. Because if you don't, who knows what happens?
Yeah. I mean, that's the big thing. It's like sort of at the point where it almost doesn't matter how they do it. You know, I mean, we talk a lot about how, hey, it's been 2 years, not to sound like the guy from Bare Naked Ladies there on accident, but, you know, it's been 2 years since you've won a conference game. And I sort of make fun of the last one because it was a 7-3 win over Arkansas.
At Arkansas, yep.
Yeah, and it's like, well, that one almost doesn't count. Who celebrates a 7-3 win? It's the picture of Beamer doing the
0-0 yeah. celebration.
Yeah, exactly.
That was how I felt when the Jets won this past weekend.
Yes, exactly. I think that is exactly the image you sent me when that happened. I think where we're at with State, where it's just like, I don't care if it's 3-0, 3-2. Just get the 600-pound gorilla off your back finally, please.
Just have a W next to an SEC team on your schedule. I think that's just the vision of that for Mississippi State fans would probably do wonders.
I don't know. Maybe they need to go see a priest because they need to exorcise the SEC demons right now.
Something along those lines. Maybe Bully can like put some holy water at midfield of Davis Wade, the goalposts. I'm not sure what the most holy place on Mississippi State's campus would be, but I'm sure that their lovable mascot or whoever's in charge could figure that out.
I'm not touching that subject. yeah, and then we're just going to move over to Ole Miss for a bit here. Once again, the one possession Kings do it again.
They do, but it being a very special one, they're, you know, the first ranked SEC win in Lane Kiffin's tenure. You know, much like I think where Mississippi State is still looking for that one win that checks a certain box, or that they have been looking to check for a while, Ole Miss was able to do that. Look, I think that it was visible early on, and like I noted early on how this Oklahoma defense was arguably the best in the country. And then as I'm watching the game, I see this chart of the total offense of the people they've placed, and it's like, okay, oh, the best offense they faced is Michigan, who has a freshman quarterback and is a nursery with how many young players are on the field at once. It's like, oh, interesting. And as the game went on, they looked like a team who had not seen an offense much like what Ole Miss had all season. They looked overwhelmed. It looked as if their aggression came back to bite them. You could argue Ole Miss could have and should have won this by more. I didn't get putting Austin Simmons in on second and goal when Trinidad Chambliss was clearly in a groove. I didn't get the fourth and one call of a wildcat. Oh, wait, it's a botched snap. Oh, wait, it's a 5-yard loss. And you just handed Oklahoma 3 points, and it could have been a lot worse. But look, you know, football is not meant for vogue. You know, you're not trying to win pretty. You're just trying to make sure you can do it. And look, I think this is where that 1-0 mindset really helped them. Like, they've been big on, we're going to go 1-0 every week. We're going to take things one week at a time, one game at a time. And I think that this game was evidence that it worked, at least in this moment. You know, you're going on the road to Norman, which they've never been before until Saturday. I didn't realize that until they played. And you're able to knock off, at this moment right now, the last ranked team on your schedule. And as of right now, not only did they do that, but they were able to do that by kind of shaking off a pretty tough loss at Georgia and set themselves up for success. They don't have to leave the state the rest of the season the rest of the regular season. And now that 1-0 mindset's going to be tested later on. But in terms of this win, it's huge. Quite simply, it's huge.
Yeah, I mean, it sets up, Ole Miss is set up just really nicely for the rest of the way here. You know, not only are all the games at home, none of them seem like they're going to be particularly challenging, though, given the state of college football, that's, betting on that is probably a bad idea. But, we're talking about South Carolina, the Citadel, Florida, all those are at home, and then at Mississippi State, who, right now is the Charlie Brown, you know, trying to kick the football.
They're also woozy, if that makes sense.
Some weeks they're always Charlie Brown, it's just that some weeks they're also woozy.
State is Charlie Brown. State is Lucy. State is Finkel. State is Einhorn.
I will say, I'm biased. I'm just really curious about how the Ole Miss Florida game goes. Just because check back with me after this weekend, but I am just like sort of curious how Florida fares with literally anybody other than Billy Napier calling plays. Like, I realize that you can't overhaul a scheme in 2 weeks, with an interim coach, but I am, it's one of those things, like, Florida's, like, early down numbers aren't, like, that bad. They're fine. Nothing crazy. Granted, they're not where they should be, given the talent, but their numbers on late downs are just horrific, and it's like, if you just have somebody else press different buttons, but I digress. To me, that's really like the only like interesting game left on there, or that's the most interesting game left on their schedule, which says a lot.
It is. To add on to that, I do think, assuming that the Lane Kiffin Florida rumors persist up until that point, that I think that will play a big role in the whole thing. Like, oh, is this Lane against his future team? How's he going to handle things? Oh, and by the way, this is the team that knocked them out of the playoff race last year, but it's at home, and DJ Lagway is still there. Oh, what's going to happen? There's going to be a lot of talk heading into that game. A lot of talk. But you're going to have that. I would not sleep on South Carolina. I know they've been wildly disappointing. I still think Lenore Sellers is a tremendous athlete, and they have probably one of, if not the best defensive lineman in DJ Stewart. But again, you do make a good point about Florida, and the Egg Bowl is obviously its own weird, glorious thing. But yeah, it's going to be, I think this is where that 1-0 mindset is really going to be tested.
I guess first, the one thing I want to remind you was, did you see the Oklahoma fans doing the gator chomp during the Oklahoma-Ole Miss game?
Weird behavior.
Like,
weird.
It's not going away, but Ole Miss handled it pretty well.
Yeah, I think it was kind of one of those, you guys hear something? No? All right. Here, key one. Take it for the first.
But yeah, I mean, the big thing is South Carolina is the SEC's agent of chaos, right? Like, they always just have like a win or two where you're just like, where was this team all here? Like, mentally, I go to 2022 when they beat Tennessee 63-38 to essentially knock them out of the playoffs. And it's like, you know, like, you know, I just always feel like they have like that one game a year where they just do that and single-handedly ruin somebody's season.
Is that game usually at home, or have they done it on the road sometimes?
Well, that Tennessee game was at home. It does seem like something weird always happens in Columbia, you know. But yeah, this South Carolina team, I don't think is very good.
That was fair. Here's one thing I'm interested to see again in the South Carolina game that I believe that started in the OU game. I know they let up 26 points, but in my opinion, Ole Miss's defense showed shades of what it was last year against Oklahoma. And I know that John Mateer is playing with 9 functioning fingers, but they still did a pretty good job containing him outside of a couple of broken coverages. They largely held the run game in check. I mean, they had 136 yards. And again, if you take away a few runs, it was probably not even as impressive as that would imply. You know, they were able to create pressure. They were able to stop big plays for the most part. I think Pete Golding's scheme was able to kind of adapt properly, which was really big, because I think it was kind of one of those after the Georgia game where you don't force a punt, you have a bit of a come to Jesus moment, or maybe a come to Vaught Hemingway moment for Ole Miss. I don't know how they go about those things. The point being, had a realization and was able to kind of implement it against a very formidable Oklahoma team in that moment. I just think that more often than not, Ole Miss was just clutch, especially Trinidad Chambliss. Like, I don't know what the third down conversion numbers were specifically, but it just seemed like most third downs, when they needed something to happen, they made something happen. I know 9 for 21 might not 9 for 21. I don't know how that stands out to a lot of people, but look, to me, that's very impressive. And even on fourth down too, to just keep some drives going, like Trinidad just made a lot of the throws he had to make. And this time of year, that's what you got to do.
Yeah. Here's a handful of stats about South Carolina's offense. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. If we're looking at EPA per play, they're 121st. If we're looking at EPA per pass, they're 110th. If we're looking at EPA per rush, they are 121st, right?
Right.
It is dreadful. So if you're feeling like Ole Miss's defense has found its groove lately, you might be feeling even better about it by the end of Saturday. On the other hand, they do have Ole Miss's Achilles heel, a mobile quarterback. I don't know. It's been a weird year for Lenore Sellers. I feel like he came into the year with a lot of hype, but I just don't really think he's quite lived up to it. But I mean, nothing on South Carolina's offense is working right now, so it's hard to put it all on him.
It is. I'd like to note that I'm guilty of some of that hype. Brendan can attest to that. I was very big on this kid. He still does have a great story. Just hasn't quite lived up to what we thought he would be statistically.
I think also the college football video game has ruined any kind of South Carolina discourse, because you pick up the game in like late July and you're like, hey, South Carolina has a really mobile quarterback and a guy with 99 overall speed. Surely they must be really good.
They weren't, and don't call me Shirley.
Yes, yes. It's just, it's one of those like weird things where it was like everybody was like hating people who play as South Carolina. But on the other hand, it's like, well, you get into the real football, and they are struggling big time.
So. Yeah. Also, by the way, this is the coveted night game that Lane Kiffin has basically been begging for since LSU. All right, you want a night game? Here you go. How do you handle it? Coming off a huge win. Schedule looks easy on paper the rest of the way. What do you do with this team?
I just figured that the Mississippi teams were just sort of condemned to a lifetime of noon and 3:15 kicks.
No, I guess there's some sort of wheel in the SEC headquarters where it's just like, all right, where are these guys going to go? 6 p.m., ESPN, book it.
I will say, though, the most, like, demented SEC games either kick at noon or night games.
Very true, yeah. I think, yeah, I guess most 2:30 games are fairly either just entertaining or just kind of low-key.
I swear that there's always, like, a like an SEC After Dark game that's just, like, absolutely nuts. Am I allowed to say SEC After Dark? That feels like cultural appropriation.
Yeah, you can go ahead and say it. I don't know if the target audience will be terribly offended.
I mean, nothing will ever top Pac-12 After Dark. We miss you. But look, if you're on the East Coast, right? If you're one of the like Eastern Time Zone SEC teams, and the game kicks off at like 6-7 o'clock, it's, I mean, you know, with the way that the television networks run and the way that, you know, there are a million ad breaks now and timeouts and all these things, that game's not ending until like 10:30.
Yeah, very true. So it does apply for a lot of people.
And then God help you if it goes to overtime.
I think at that point, you're just kind of sticking it out, kind of like, I think you're basically Major Kong riding the rocket to the end, basically.
That's what I was not bitter about, but it was kind of funny on Saturday with State in Texas. I was like, man, last time I was here, it went to overtime. And it went to overtime again, and I'm just like...
If I had a nickel.
Yeah, I know. It's just one of those things. It's like, man, it's already a long day. I don't need more football. But regardless, yeah, I mean, the SEC is weird, man. I look at South Carolina, and I'm just not terribly enthused by like anything that they put together. But they had Bama on the ropes last week.
They did, and I wonder if they come into this game. I'm interested to see how they handle that mentally. Again, I think a lot of this is mental for Ole Miss. Okay, you're coming off the biggest win of the year, arguably your biggest win in several years, with, on paper, a very clean path. How do you handle this? Do you continue the 1-0 mindset, or does something kind of get to you where you start to look ahead and you start to see Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the distance? Or
I think that's probably out of the question right now.
Well, it is, but you said it yourself, the SEC is very weird. Whereas South Carolina, okay, you just came off a heartbreaking loss at home to arguably the best team in the SEC. Are you able to just kind of galvanize and respond, or do you let the heartbreak from that translate over to your trip to the Grove?
Right. Yeah, and then I believe we have the first CFP rankings this week, or this coming week.
We do, yeah.
You know, curious to see where Ole Miss fits in, assuming that they don't lose. Because right now there are a lot of teams that have one loss or fewer.
There are. And I believe as of right now, they have one win over a currently ranked team. Well, then again, I mean, is Tulane ranked? I haven't gotten a chance to look because I know that they're at the very least competing for that group.
No, they're receiving votes.
They're receiving votes. Okay, so they only have the one ranked win compared to other SEC teams that have more of them, including Georgia, who they lost to. Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how things shake out.
I mean, I'm just looking through the AP poll, and what? There are two teams in the top 17 that have two losses, you know? And it's going to be rough, man. You know, it's one of those things where you're like, would they really keep a two-loss SEC team out? And then you just kind of look at where the field is right now and the fact that it'd be like, well, if Ole Miss picks up a loss in one of these next four games, I don't think you can argue them to be in it.
You cannot. I think the only SEC team, non-SEC team with two losses that really has a shot is Notre Dame. Other than that, nobody else is really that far within range or that firmly on the bubble.
Yeah, you know, unless, you know, something dumb like Florida or Mississippi State finishing strong happens and Ole Miss somehow drops a game to one of those two. I just don't really see it. But, I mean, that's why the Oklahoma win is so big, because it was like, well, you don't have to deal with that. And also, like, surely Oklahoma's going to finish ranked, right? They sort of needed them to, because before that was what? Their best win was LSU?
LSU, who has since fired Brian Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, that is the... like double-edged sword of having a quote-unquote, well, I'm not even going to do that, of having an easier SEC schedule.
In comparison to others, yeah.
Is like, you know, it's all in front of you. You don't have to worry about, well, you know, you're not like a Florida or an Oklahoma where it's like, well, technically, if we got to the end of the season with three losses, we would have a pretty darn good case.
Right, and you get into the world of hypotheticals and all that jazz.
Which the SEC is undefeated in.
Very true. Yes, we have to acknowledge that.
Raise a banner at the headquarters for undefeated hypothetical games. But yeah, you know, on the other hand, it's like you don't get any freebies.
Very true. Like if you lose one of these next two, it's not really going to be looked at as like, oh, you had a bad day. No, it's going to be looked at as, no, this is the difference maker between you either getting maybe a home game or missing out on the field entirely.
Yeah, they're not going to be playing Daniel Powder. They'll just be it'll be more like Jeff Probst extinguishing your torch.
Very true, yeah.
But
nice Survivor reference.
Thank you. It's the one show I watch. It's my one cultural reference that I'm allowed to make.
It's a very good one, in fairness.
But yeah, anything else you want to talk about?
In terms of that is all. But in terms of other stuff, we're just getting started. You can follow me on Twitter at JS Murphy Media. I will be at the Georgia game, so you can find my tweets, live tweets from that, and games and my game story/sidebar. You can find my content there. Also, we got an Instagram page at DJournal Sports. Be sure to follow us there as well.
That was a pretty flawless transition there.
Well,
no shame at all on that one.
Well, I mean, you ruled out it's plug time, so you kind of got to pivot after that.
Anyway, if you're looking for a family restaurant with a relaxed atmosphere and that won't break the bank, then come to Vanelli's Bistro in Tupelo. They've got pizza, pasta, and more. Go taste the difference at Vanelli's, located at 206 West Main Street. If you want to call in your order for pickup, the number is 844-4410. And then you can follow me on Twitter at bferrell727. You can follow the journal at DJournal Sports. You can find all of our coverage at djournal.com. James, am I missing anything?
I think that's it.
Yeah. At a certain point, it just kind of all rolls off the tongue. Mm-hmm. James, thanks for joining me for this one.
Thanks for having me. Can't wait for November.
Yeah, enjoy the games this weekend, everybody. Take care, and have a good one.